Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to this very, very, very special afternoon satsang, which we are privileged to hold on the Aradhana Mahotsavam day. And it has been such a beautiful day till now. The segment that has just concluded, it has been morning glory. And that is what has been this morning. You know, it has been morning glory throughout, from the time the Veda chants reverberated in the Kulwant Hall, followed by a beautiful Kriti program where two Kritis were sung, which have been specially composed on Swami's glory, and they were sung by his children. Of course, everybody are his children. Everybody is God's children. So there were musicians, there were students, there were everybody in that group singing. It was such a fantastic experience that was followed by such a brilliant, ebullient, charging, positive energy filled talk by Mr. Gurumurthy. Dear listeners, in case just by chance you were unable to listen to that talk, because of course all around the world this Mahotsavam is being celebrated and every one of you would have been busy in your respective centers and samitis, please do download and listen to the talk, today morning's talk by Mr. Gurumurthy. So phenomenal, so charging, and it gives us an idea of how practically applicable are all of Swami's teachings. That was followed by Bhagwan's discourse and then bhajans, and you have been treated to a beautiful morning glory segment. And now it is with great gratitude and joy in my heart that I would like to welcome you on behalf of myself, Arvind of Team Radio Sai, and dear brother Prem, to this beautiful segment of afternoon satsang. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind. And it's a day which evokes mixed feelings, one would say. We've called it Aradhana Mahotsavam, the day we celebrate. But it's with a lot of reservation that we say that it's a Mahotsavam, isn't it?
Prem, actually, you know, my thoughts are exactly on this, because something happened just today, mm-hmm. which I would like to share. It is so thrilling. And it reinforces an experience that had happened 2 years ago on this exact same day.
Okay.
You know, around the world, you know, we have heard of this phenomenon where Vibhuti, Amrit, different things manifest from Swami's photographs. And this is something very, very special to Swami, if you see. In the sense, like they say, Krishna had the peacock feather. And, you know, Shirdi Baba had his kafni and the dhuni. Like that, every avatar seems to choose certain physical traits and characteristics.
Right.
And I definitely feel that for our Swami, during his physical avatarhood, just like chair and the kerchief were his symbols or insignia, I feel after the physical body, Vibhuti and Kumkum and Chandan and these things coming from his photographs have definitely a Satya Sai specific sign. Don't you agree? I mean,
absolutely. No. Three standard things maybe you could say. One is Vibhuti, which is the most common. The next one is maybe Amritam coming out of a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the third one is the fragrance of Swami being felt in somebody's...
Yes, you know, because Prem, if you see this, what happens is, it's not as if it comes only from Swami's pictures. It'll come from the picture of Jesus, it'll come from Ganesha.
The surprising coincidence is it's solid, liquid and gas.
Oh, yeah, wow.
You know,
that's amazing.
Subtler than the other maybe.
Yeah, Vibhuti solid. This is liquid and the aroma is gas. Fantastic. Nice observation, Prem. The other observation, what I was telling is, it might be coming from different pictures, but invariably that person has, apparently this is how it is, what I have seen, mm-hmm. has association or is having Swami's picture in the shrine. If Swami's picture is present, it comes in others also. So therefore I feel it's a speciality of the
right.
Satya Sai Avatar. So now, what happened is, on a few occasions, there had been some Vibhuti manifestations at home from pictures, and I was very, very happy about this. Now, what happened is, in the last 40 odd days, there was no Vibhuti or anything that manifested in the altar or anywhere. One thing about Swami's such manifestations is, it actually comes without reason. It goes without reason, in the sense, if somebody were to ask you, what is that I should do so that Vibhuti manifests from photograph in my house? You have no idea. And the same way, what is it that I should not do so that it should continue forever? It is coming in my house. It should continue forever. What is it that I should not do to offend No idea. I mean, you have no reason for that. Just like Swami giving an interview or Swami blessing you with Padnamaskar. There's no reason, no season. You are happy when it comes at home with no reason. You know, sometimes people have asked, how is it, what is it that you're doing that Vibhuti comes at home? Frankly, nothing special. I mean, it's just being the same. It is just an expression of His grace. And I'm happy with that. But somehow, in spite of knowing all this and thinking that I'm firmly grounded in this, when it stops, in the sense, as I said, for 40 days it has not come, I really started thinking, what is wrong with me? What have I done wrong? In the sense, this is a hypocrisy, you know, this is what happens. When telling others, I say, see, really I'm not doing anything special. And it has nothing to do with me, it is only His love and grace. That is what I say. But do I believe in that? Because when it stops, I feel it is something that I have done. Imagine my ego when I am thinking that I am able to stop the the vibhuti flow from Swami because of what I have done. I mean, it's humongous ego actually. But it comes disguised as if I am a sinner, I have done something wrong. All said and done, I was feeling very bad. And that is when I remembered what you said, you know, in the sense, Aradhana Mahotsavam. Mahotsavam means Maha Utsavam, a great festival, a grand celebration. In 2012, that was when I was wondering, Swami, this was the first, if you see 2012 means it was the first anniversary of the Mahasamadhi. So, this was going to be the first Aradhana Mahotsavam. Before that it was just a 3-day, you know, it was like the Mahasamadhi, 3 days. So, I was wondering, Swami, what is it? What is the Mahotsavam? What are we celebrating today? What will be, I mean, how do you greet people? On Ram Navami you say, Holy Ram Navami. Dasara you say, Happy Dasara. What do you say for Aradhana? I mean, what do you say? Have a solemn Aradhana. I mean, I just was wondering, what is this? And that, I remember that day I was doing video shooting, so I was, as I was shooting, you know, I was thinking that whenever I had shot in the past, I used to have as my focus Swami in His physical form. And now, I'm not able to see the form. You know, I'm telling myself, but I'm not convinced. I'm telling myself that, you know, Swami is everywhere. You don't worry, Swami is there. But I'm not convinced as such. In the sense, what do you mean He's everywhere? I can't see Him anywhere. I used to see Him in one place. Now He's not even there. So He's not anywhere. Forget the thing of Him being everywhere. So all these thoughts made me feel very sad. And I was shedding tears even as I was shooting the Samadhi, the marble there and the empty chair, you know. So, this is what happened and the whole morning session concluded. I went back home. And when we went back home, all of us, you know, me, my mother, my father, my wife, we returned home and suddenly I heard my mom's scream, you know. Arvind! She shouted and I wondered what happened. Did she have a fall? Because she slips sometimes. So, I rushed to her room and she was pointing to a photograph of Swami. And on the photograph, I saw Vibhuti. Mm-hmm. And I was thrilled. This was the first time it was happening at home. And I was, oh. First, you know, my scientific mind, the devil monkey mind, nobody was at home. So nobody could have done it, correct? Because all four of us had gone. So I was doing all that. But it hit me. I was really happy. And I was, wow, I was thinking. My mother ran out of the room because she wanted to tell my wife, who was in the other room, that, you know, something fantastic has happened. And even as she ran, I told mom, be careful, you know, don't get so excited. Because I don't want you to lose footing. And she goes to the other room. And now the scream is even louder. Arvind! And when she screams, I thought, that's it. This time she has definitely fallen. So I rushed. I rushed to her. But when I went there, you know, she is standing. Her hands are almost shivering. She has goosebumps. And she's pointing to the photograph in the altar. And there's Vibhuti. And, you know, the Naivedyam that we offer to the Lord, food that is kept for the Lord to sanctify and later we partake it as prasadam, on that food also there is Vibhuti. And this was the first occasion and now, you know, my body started shivering because from within my heart, I felt as if it was Swami saying, don't forget I'm always with you. Don't forget I'm always with you. Today is indeed a day of celebration. This was the message that I felt coming from within, that this is not a sad day. It is not a sorrowful day because it is indeed a celebration. A celebration of the day when I moved out of Yajur Mandir and into the Hriday Mandir. I moved out of the temple that of brick and mortar into the temple of love that your heart is. And so now I am more easily available, more easily accessible. So therefore celebrate. Celebrate the greater ease of access and the greater availability of Swami. Now this elaborate introduction I am giving because today morning, this is what my thought was. That Swami, 2 years back, so grand it was. Now, you know, 40 days, there's no vibhuti, nothing. And I felt a little sad. But once I went to Mandir, and that is why, you know, I was telling the listeners that you must listen to the talk that was delivered today morning. Because in the Mandir, I found all my energy returning. I started feeling great. I started feeling wonderful. All positivity came back. And I realized, you know, we know Swami is God. We know Swami is the ultimate. And yet we feel thrilled when we hear of His glories, because there's a difference between theoretically knowing and experiencing it. When you start listening to His stories, we experience that glory in our heart and such thrill comes. And I was in a state of thrill, complete thrill. And after that comes Swami's discourse. Again, another beautiful discourse. It was visual, it was a video that was played. And in the discourse, Swami says a statement. People feel bad and sad thinking that I'm not getting sakshatkaram, I'm not getting contact with Swami. Don't worry, I will give contact. And Swami was talking about how you should seek God within. You know, this was like a reinforcement for me, because 2 years back, as I said, the message that I felt was Swami has moved from Yajur Mandir to Hriday Mandir, and today Swami was telling, don't seek outside. Explicitly Swami made that statement. He said, don't seek outside, seek within, and don't feel sad that Swami you are not getting. You will get. Can you believe it, Prem? Even as this statement Swami is making, my phone is vibrating. Because I put it in silent mode so that it doesn't ring in the mandir. So I picked up, I saw it was my dad. I wondered what happened. And apparently my dad was busy, so he was unable to come to the mandir. So I pick up the call and he says, Arvind, Vibhuti has poured from the photograph. For me, this was a tremendous coincidence, if you call it, you know. Swami saying that don't feel bad, Swami is not with you, Swami is there. Swami is again telling that seek within, you will find. And me thinking and feeling sad in the morning. And of course, my dad has his own story for how he was thinking and how it matched. That is a common thing. My wife has her own story. You know, Swami with one action answers 10 people, 15 people. That is different. I am telling my side of the story. It was so thrilling, and that is why I feel this Aradhana day is indeed a Mahotsavam. It is a day of great celebration, because in Swami's own words, Swami has become more accessible to us. He has always been our Hridayavasi, but now He is enforcing us to connect with the Hridayavasi Sai so that we can feel Him every moment of our lives.
You know, Arvind, even as you were saying that Swami has moved from the Yajur Mandir to the Hriday Mandir, and then later you said He was always the Hridayavasi. You know, that is the most interesting thing, because whenever people said Swami has moved from the limited to the limitless, the thought which always strikes me was, when was He the limited? When you say that Swami was only in Puttaparthi, now He is everywhere. When was He only in Puttaparthi?
Correct.
Wasn't it our stupidity to think that Swami was, and all the pain which we are feeling, you know, how much ever our mind might come and try to tell us things, and since we have not internalized it, the fact is, the reality is that Swami was always not that body. It's not only now. Swami was always limitless and Swami was always absolute. And as somebody beautifully said, you know, the first thing which an avatar does, an embodiment of divinity does, is that he distracts you from the world, which is the real distraction. He distracts you from the world. But then it comes to a point where that presence is so strong that it distracts you from the message. I think we all were in that state where that presence started distracting us from, you know, what we were trying to do or what we were trying to achieve. And this day was that day where Swami was in a very, very, you could say that in a very wild way, Swami removed that distraction. And Swami had kind of slapped us into this realization that I am this. And you have lost me for a while.
Beautiful. You know, it is always like that, Prem, in the sense in life also. When we feel we are lacking something, that is when we start actively seeking that. As long as it's given on a platter to us, we may not appreciate it. We may not be able to understand its value. You know, I'm reminded of a Chinnakatha that Swami says that there's a boy who is playing with a diamond as if it's his marble. You know, every day he plays with that. A merchant who knows the value of that diamond comes to the child and says, I will give you 10 marbles, can you give me that marble? The child suddenly feels, he is just attached to the marble, that's why. So he says, I don't want to give this marble up.
Okay.
Then he says, I'll give you 20, I'll give you 30. Now the child suddenly starts feeling, why is my marble so special? So he says, no. And the next day when this merchant approaches him, this boy goes and tells his mother that this is what is happening. Now mother also definitely doesn't know the value of that diamond, otherwise why will she allow the child to play with it as if it's a marble? So she tells the child, from today onward you play inside the house. So the child starts playing inside the house, you know. And then somebody else, you know, that same merchant comes and starts pleading with the mother. The story goes on where finally the mother says, you know, you give me that marble. She keeps it in the safe storage, locks it and says, you know, you don't play with that. I don't know what it is, but it is definitely something very valuable. For me personally, that is what has happened. You know, just like that child attached to the marble, I have been very, very attached to Swami. And yes, I have loved Swami. I love Swami a lot. But I really don't know if I valued him, like how he has to be valued. Because today if I am told that you can get one darshan, the value that I will give for that one darshan, I don't know if that was, I mean, weren't all the darshans that he gave same as the darshan that I will get today? But the value that I will be giving to the darshan today, what it is, did I give, forget every darshan, at least one darshan did I give that much value? I don't know, I am not sure. What I feel has happened, among the various positives, one positive is, with the physical disappearing, it suddenly gives us so much focus, so much interest to dive deep into Swami's life, dive deep into his teachings, to garner those precious pearls and diamonds so that we can keep it safe in the locker of our heart.
You know, that very story which you said, I've heard a different version of that story, which also is as profound as the one which you said. You know, the same story, there's a boy who's playing with a diamond without knowing that it's a diamond.
Okay.
And there is this merchant who's basically a gem merchant who goes by in his caravan, and something catches his eye, which is this diamond reflecting the sun's rays. And the moment that catches his eye, he realizes that somebody is having a very, very precious stone there. So he takes a detour, comes to this boy and finds him playing marbles with this diamond in his hand. So he says, can you give this diamond to me? I'll give you 10 marbles in return. That's what he says. And this boy says, no, this is the most beautiful marble that I have, so I want to keep this. So then the man says, can I give you 100 rupees for that? So the boy is a little hesitant, and 100 rupees for one marble. And he says, no, this marble is my favorite. So the man says, I'll give you 500 rupees for this marble. And then the boy says, 500 rupees is too much, you know, even if it's your favorite marble. So he gives it and gets 500. And the story goes, the moment the merchant takes the diamond in his hand, it goes up in smoke. And he hears the diamond speak to him. You know, that's the story. It's a legend. The diamond says, see, that boy did not know my value, so I don't mind being misused. You know my value, but you're giving less for me.
Oh, wow.
I will not stand in your hand. You know, it is one thing to not know Swami and not know Swami's value and fritter away the chance. But having known that value, having known how precious that opportunity is to be with Swami, I think it would be very, very foolish on our part not to make amends and do the right things.
Beautifully put, Prem. Wow, that's a very nice twist on a existing story, and fantastic. You know, coming back, it's inescapable that on a day such as this, that all the thoughts, all the words center upon the purpose of human life. Because when we talk of Swami's life, we invariably on this day come to talking about the purpose of Swami's life. And of course, different people will say different things as to what is the purpose of Swami's life. But I am sure nobody can deny the fact that the purpose of Swami's life, physical sojourn, was to make us realize the purpose of our life. And therefore I say, invariably on this day, the thought or the words that arise are linked inextricably, and they are intertwined with the purpose of our lives.
In fact, even as you're saying, sorry to interrupt you, there's another story which says that a man who goes to a master And he asks him, what is the purpose of life?
Hmm.
And the master says, that is the purpose of life. He says, what?
Okay.
He says, to ask for the purpose of life is the very purpose of life. And when you say that Swami has come down, that is the purpose of Swami's advent, to make us seek that purpose of life. You know, it's very, very true, very, very well said.
Because I remember once I was traveling by aircraft from Bangalore to Bombay, there was a lady sitting by my side, and she happened to ask me what I'm working, what's my goal in life. Now, when she asked me what's my goal in life, I didn't know how to answer. So I thought the best was to put the ball back in her court. I asked her, what is your goal in life? So the lady said, actually, I can answer you for your satisfaction, but my goal in life, I don't know if you will understand. So I said, what do you mean? She said, no, it is something that's very lofty. So, I just randomly threw a dagger in the dark and I said, is the goal of your life moksha? She said, yeah. Oh, you know moksha. So I said, yes. And we started, you know, talking on spiritual topics. But what I would like to say is, invariably, we all, having come to Swami's fold, we more or less theoretically agree that the goal in our life is moksha, to be liberated. It's a different thing that you and me, we don't know what this moksha is. We have our own concept of moksha, but this much we theoretically know, that the purpose of our life is moksha. So, I think it's a good thing that we carry out this satsang on this theme of moksha.
Very true, because I think it as a concept is misunderstood, and it wouldn't be right to call it misunderstanding the concept, but I think it's a concept, a knowledge of that concept which grows with us. You know, what we thought of, what I thought of what moksha was maybe 10 years ago is not what I think of it today. I think that concept itself grows with each one of us. So when we talk of moksha today, it is definitely not the absolute idea of moksha. It is, I think, what we have come to understand it as today. It might be different tomorrow also.
And what, you know, we have gathered is all because of Swami. There's no doubt in that. You know, what I mean to say is, I had a concept that moksha is like this, like this, like this. And then you see, there's no doubt in us that Swami is, yes, he is, not that he has achieved that state, he's forever in that state, he's God, and that's the state that we wish to achieve. You know, Atma Sakshatkaram, or, you know, being one with God, becoming God, moksha, different names for the same thing. So, we know that Swami is the moksha state. Let's call Swami as the moksha state. So that is what I wish to achieve. And what has been the greatest benefit of that is, when you think Swami is the moksha state, it shatters all your delusions about moksha. You think moksha means a person will speak only spiritual stuff. You see Swami coming out and telling, kitna idli khaya, idli mein chutney kaisa tha, chutney became more spicy, now how many idlis did you eat, what did you have for breakfast, and what is the price of tomatoes in the market, and what is there in the newspaper today. Such mundane stuff that you feel that even a beginner on the path of spirituality will be giving up these things. One of the first things to give up are the mundane stuff. And then you see Swami indulging apparently in that, and then breaks your concept. You know, you think that moksha means, you would have thought that moksha means a person doesn't talk of any worldly and mundane stuff. No, it's not like that, because Swami is talking that. So in that manner, you know, having lived with Swami, I don't know if we have understood even to this day what moksha is, but this much I can say with guarantee, that we have definitely cleared so many misconceptions and wrong ideas about moksha.
Very true. But even as you're saying that, you know, what Swami was is the perfect state, I just like to draw an analogy here. You know, sometime back I was trying to look for some good speakers for our studio. So I was...
The mic and speakers.
Yeah, mic and speakers, you know. Hmm. So I went on to YouTube, was seeing a few reviews, and they were playing out music on a few speakers and saying that this one is good and this one's better and this one's bass is really good. But a disclaimer which would often come is, now see, this speaker is really good, I can hear it now, but when I am playing this for you on the video, it is only as good as your speaker in the computer is.
Mm.
He said, so you might not be able to see the difference because it is only as good as your speaker is. You know, but actually it is much better than that. So when we say that Swami was that moksha state, he embodied that state of liberation or that ultimate state, I think it is so much colored on the way we looked at Swami, the way we understood Swami, and we were always misunderstanding Swami, if I could say that so. And it's a confession which we sooner we make, the faster we can go towards that understanding. But that is the thing, because we are so, as it's always said, you know, the difference between the approach to knowledge in the Vedantic style and in the academic style. In Vedanta, you're told in the very first class that you cannot understand it. And then they say, let's go and understand it. You know, the first thing which they told, which you're told is that, you know, your mind and your intellect and your words cannot comprehend this. Come, let us comprehend it now.
Having known this,
now having known this, come, let us try. You know, I think that is the approach, because we have to know that just imitating Swami will never take us to that state, because Swami was all that which would come if you reach that state. By imitating the symptoms of that state, I don't think we could ever reach that state.
Yes, the root is
right. As one of our brothers once in a meeting, he shared with us, right? He said, people are imitating Swami and not emulating Swami. I felt that was put in one sentence what all of us are doing sometimes.
Perfect. Beautiful. So, it becomes really tough, as you say, to talk about what is moksha. Because, you know, Swami has said this in his discourse. He says, it's a state, how much ever you speak about it, you will never describe it completely. And the minute you experience it, you lose the need and desire to talk about it. So those who know do not speak, and those who speak do not know. That is the summum bonum about the state of moksha. One more point that I'm reminded at here is one beautiful way, you know, which actually has been known as has been called the Neti philosophy in the scriptures. The Neti philosophy is described as a way to determine who you truly are, you know, and it is done by ruling out. We often use this technique in multiple choice questions. You know, a question is asked in the examination. I don't know the answer. I'm given choices A, B, C, D. I still don't know the answer, but I say it definitely can't be D. It can't be B. It must be A or C. Among A or C, I think less chance of C, therefore A. So,
if you have a lifeline, you can go for 50-50.
Yes, in the who will be a millionaire or kaun banega karorpati, you have that option. So, this is actually Neti philosophy in practice, as we understood. In the sense, you say, it is not this, it is not this, it is not this. The Neti philosophy says that whenever you ask, who am I? Or, who is God? You start by saying, no, it is not the body. It is not the mind. It is not the floor. It is not the table. It is not this. And they say that when you rule out everything, after ruling out everything, what remains? That is God. Now, this is the traditional way of understanding Neti philosophy. See, the beauty of having the master, having the Lord as a teacher is, when Swami explains Neti philosophy, he brings it out so beautifully by just adding one syllable, one sound syllable. We often think Neti, we think that Neti means not this, not this, not this. In one discourse I remember Swami said, Neti means not only this, not this alone, not this alone. It is not just not this, it is not this alone. See the beauty that Swami has brought in, you know. When you say that, who am I? When you ask who am I or who is God, instead of saying, I am not the bottle, I am not the chair, I am not the mic, I am not the photograph, I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. You are now saying, I am not only the bottle, I am not only the chair, I am not only the mic, which brings you to the level of omnipresence, omnipotence and omniscience. You know, while traditionally we think of the Neti philosophy as an exclusive theory, you exclude everything and what remains, Swami makes it an inclusive theory and brings so much light with one word that he says. Wow. I mean, I just felt like sharing this because I felt this is a beautiful pointer. These are all, you know, indicate, like, for example, I'm taking a negative example. I'm sorry for that, but for some of the great diseases like cancer, let's say cancer, you know, there's nothing like a cause. For if you take chickenpox, there's a cause. Such and such a microorganism causes chickenpox. But for cancer, there's no cause. There are only risk factors.
Okay.
They say that if you smoke, there's a greater chance that you get cancer. Doesn't mean that every smoker gets cancer. Doesn't mean that if you don't smoke, you won't get cancer. So in that way, they list out so many things. If you're in a living in a industrial city, is a risk factor. So for heart disease, for example, eating more of fats is a risk factor. So there are only risk factors. There are no causes, because you cannot say that this is because of this, this will happen. So, though, as I said, this is a negative example, but in moksha also, there's nothing like a definite, this is the thing. You do this and this is what happens. I feel that there are all indicators. So, from Swami's discourse on this Nethi concept, one of the indicators of moksha or a realized being or being one with God, I think, is inclusivity, where you include everything, where you don't exclude. You don't say, hey, that guy is mean, this guy is bad, I'm good, not like that. You include, because it is not this, it is not this alone, not this one, not only this. So inclusivity over exclusivity, I definitely feel is one pointer to show that a person is self-realized. It's an indicator also.
Yep, it is indeed, but it's very difficult to say one quality. As I said, you know, whatever we've seen, because that is one of the things that Swami did. Swami shattered our idea of a person who is realized or who's a person who has reached the ultimate state. You know, you would often think that a person who's realized would have his eyes half closed, who's
yeah,
in a very, very soft tone.
Maybe he'll levitate.
But when Swami gave a discourse, he fired. You know, there was so much of energy in that discourse.
That is publicly. Privately, he has really fired people.
I mean, really?
You know, he has blasted out people.
Yeah, absolutely. If you think that a person who's realized would never show anger, that was not true with Swami. Swami showed anger. That was again the catch. You know, if you just observe Swami, as I said, if you observe him without the understanding, it would be like he's angry, he's happy, he was crying, he's shedding tears. But he was somebody who was above those emotions, and he was able to put out that emotion when he wanted and take it out when he didn't want. I feel that is also a very, very important sign of a person who's reached that state, who is in absolute control of everything. When Swami says, you are the mastermind, I mean, you are the master of the mind, I think that includes all this. You are able to get angry when you want to get angry, when you feel it is necessary to get angry, and then stop.
Exactly.
You have the ability to show compassion when it is necessary and not show compassion when you feel it
it's
is
necessary.
Not going to be
yes.
helpful.
You know, that is the thing. Where he is able to treat his own body and mind too as objects. We often treat the body and mind as ourselves. So that is subject. So I can't treat my body like how I treat the chair, because chair is an object. The body, I am it is me. But that is what a realized person, because that is the truth. He's able to objectivize even the body and mind. And that is precisely what Swami told in the discourse today morning. He said, give up in this japa, dhyana, bhajan, all these are okay. But the ultimate sadhana that you have to do is to give up body attachment. You have to give up this body consciousness. So, Prem, I think that, you know, if we start talking this way, because we are not in that state, as Swami says, one who is in the state doesn't talk. One who talks is not in that state. I mean, so we'll just go on and we will contradict ourselves because this state encompasses everything.
Right.
So the contradiction definitely will come in. It is darkness, it is light, it is pain, it is pleasure. So there's nothing that it is not. It is everything. And yet it is nothing. I mean, it is so filled with paradoxes. So rather than describe the state, we have given a few hints and pointers. We can definitely, you know, go into some of the things that we can do, some of the blessings that we can seek, so that our journey to this state becomes easier.
I think that is the point where we will come into those three important things which Swami has himself mentioned many times, and it is a common thread in most spiritual discourses by other saints and sages too. We'll come to that. Maybe we'll just take a short break. We'll play a little song, and on the other side of it, we'll continue this discussion.
Sai Darbar, ki jagamanta Sai.
Welcome back, dear listeners. As we have just got about half an hour left, we will quickly try to go through what we have gathered. This is from the Viveka Chudamani, a treatise that has been credited to Adi Shankaracharya, the greatest Advaita in the possibly the world has ever seen, with our salutations at his lotus feet. And this is something that has been quoted often in Swami's presence. I have heard at least 3 talks where this has been quoted in Swami's presence, and it is so profound and so full of meaning. It comes as the 3rd shloka in the Viveka Chudamani. The Viveka Chudamani actually consists of about 580 verses in Sanskrit, which is in the form of a dialogue between the master and the disciple, where the master explains to the disciple the nature of the Atman and the ways to research and know the Atman. So the book takes the disciple on a step-by-step instruction to reach Brahman. And in fact, the famous, Brahma Satyam Jagat Nitya, that is taken from the Viveka Chudamani. So in the 3rd shloka, Adi Shankara describes the 3 rare things, 3 great blessings that a jiva or an individual soul can get in its journey towards the ultimate destination of jivan mukta, that is moksha.
And Swami says, Shankara says, they are manushyatvam, mumukshatvam, and mahapurusha samshrayaha. Manushyatvam, as we all know, is a human birth. To be given a human birth is very rare. And then he says mumukshatvam, the desire for moksha, the yearning to be liberated, that is mumukshatvam. And mahapurusha samshrayaha means the blessings of a divine personage.
The protecting care of a perfected being. Right. That's how it is technically defined. So, manushyatvam, time and again we hear Swami say that a great blessing that we can get is a birth as a human being. When we hear these 3 things, manushyatvam, mumukshatvam, mahapurusha samshraya, it feels so fantastic because first blessing we have already got. The very fact that we are sitting and listening to the satsang proves that we are manushya, we are humans. This manushyatvam, Swami says, jantu naam narajanma durlabham. Among all the beings, life as a human being is very, very rare. Dear listeners, in order, we know this theoretically, we know this, we have heard this, but do we appreciate what it means to be a human being? In order to gain some appreciation about this, here's a little detour which will definitely be enjoyable. This detour is a few stories of the lovable and dear Sai Gita. For those of you who are unaware, Sai Gita was Swami's pet elephant. She came to Swami when she was just a calf. And her story is so beautiful, She used to receive interviews from Bhagwan. And a time came when Swami said, enough, no more interviews for Sai Gita. And it was not because he was upset with her, it was because even after both the doors were opened, she wouldn't fit into the interview room. That is when Swami got a small shed built for her right next to the mandir. And she grew in size, she grew in size. Whenever I hear the story of the little Sai Gita and Swami, I am reminded of the story of the Matsyavatar. Because the sage there takes the fish that keeps growing in size and he has to shift it from a tumbler to a kamandalu to a big bucket to a big drum to a pond to a river to the ocean. So that way, Sai Gita kept growing, and finally a shed was erected for her towards the northern side of the mandir. And it is said that the shed was erected in such a manner that the entry for the shed was on the northern side, mm-hmm. while the mandir was on the southern side. So there was no way Sai Gita could see her beloved Swami. What happened the next day? The whole shed, which was built of tarpaulin sheets, apart from that, asbestos sheets, it was just torn down because she was unable to bear that separation from Swami. She wanted to have darshan. And Swami smiled and said, if you do this, what else will happen? She had torn down her whole accommodation so that she could see Swami. The next shed that was built in such a manner that she could see Swami. Now, why I told all this is because Sai Gita's ability to see her Lord transcended the mere sight that the eye gives. Later on, as we know, she was shifted to a shed that was opposite to the senior boys' hostel.
Right.
Along the main road of Puttaparthi. One day, as all the students were going about their normal day-to-day routine in the hostel, they heard a loud trumpeting. And of course, this was from Sai Geeta. They wondered what had happened and they all rushed. They saw that Sai Geeta was at her entrance and she was pushing at the gate. That was when, at a distance, they could see Swami's car coming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Swami, at those days, did not, you know, travel with that convoy and there was no jeep in front with the siren and there were no sevadals running by the side with ropes, nothing. It was, so there was no way to know when Swami is coming, but because of Sai Geeta's trumpet, and there is not just one occasion, on numerous occasions, the students in the hostel have got to know about Swami's arrival because of Sai Geeta's trumpeting. She used to herald the arrival of Swami. And so all the boys rush out and Sai Geeta, usually what happens is Sai Geeta, Swami slows down his car near Sai Geeta, he lowers the window, feeds her a few fruits and goes ahead. But this day, Sai Geeta seemed to be behaving strangely. She just went and put her trunk on the bonnet of the car, as if stopping the car and saying that you cannot proceed now. So, the driver also was hesitant, he did not know what to do. Swami lowers the window and he is having fruits in the hand and he is calling out to Geeta, 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 but for some strange reason, she is not interested in eating the fruits also which the Lord is offering. She continues to stand with her trunk on the bonnet. Swami now alights from the car, walks up to Sai Geeta, he is gently patting her and petting her on the trunk and softly whispering, Geeta, Geeta, Geeta. And he offers an apple and Sai Geeta doesn't eat. Finally, Swami says, okay, I am not going. And then offers the apple. And Sai Geeta does not want to accept it in her trunk. She opens her mouth. She wants Swami to put it directly into her mouth on her tongue. Swami's half of his arm goes into Sai Geeta's mouth. Swami feeds her the apple. And she eats the apple. And then Swami, before getting into the car, turns to the students who are there and says, you know, boys, I had decided to actually leave to Vrindavan. But now that I have promised to Sai Geeta, I have to go back. And he sits in the car and goes back to Mandir. And all the students are just shell-shocked. You know, here is a lower being supposed to be, an elephant, not as elevated in birth as a human being, but she already knew that Swami was not going for a drive, but Swami was going to Vrindavan, and she just did not want him to go. Nobody else knew, and it was her devotion and love that kept Swami back in Prashanthi Nilayam. And I'm sure, Prem, you will have heard, we would have read and heard so many such stories of her love and devotion.
Right. I think one very famous one among students is that, you know, whenever Swami would return from Vrindavan, we would line the, what do you call that, the road, boys would stand there. If it is non-darshan hours or sometimes early in the morning when Swami would come, instead of being in the mandir, they would be
along the road.
I think on one occasion when Sai Geeta also was brought in, she was also one of those.
She was always a part of every welcome routine.
And she was also there. And one thing which we would often see with Sai Geeta is when Swami would go near her or when Swami is about to come, you know, she would start urinating.
In excitement.
Right, in excitement. That's one of the things the animals usually do. And they would always bring a bucket along when she comes.
Oh, it would be a waterfall, Prem.
Right.
You know, it would be a waterfall.
The thing which Swami was actually concerned about was when later years when she used to come into the mandir, was that after she urinates, the marble floor becomes very slippery for her to walk. So that's what Swami used to be concerned about. You know, the more after she urinates, people would bring huge swabs of cloth and wipe out the whole place. So on that particular occasion when Swami is coming back and she was there, and the moment she saw Swami's car in the distance, she started urinating, and just as it would happen in the mandir, immediately all the boys ran away because...
Evasive action, yes.
Right,
it's a waterfall
and there would be splash all over the place. And by then Swami was there, and Swami was seeing this discomfort on boys when she started urinating. And apparently Swami looked at them and very sternly Swami told them, go and drink that urine of Sai Geeta. At least then you will get a little bit of her devotion. That's how much Swami gave importance to Sai Geeta, in the sense of how much Swami acknowledged her devotion. It's not just that importance, how much Swami himself acknowledged her devotion.
Dear listeners, please go to the Radio Sai website and just search for Sai Geeta. I think it's called The Mystifying Tale of Unbounded Love or something like that. Just search for Sai Gita and read through at least 15 such terrific experiences. I mean, you should definitely read about how they suspected that Sai Gita is pregnant and how Swami said she's a brahmachari. There are so many stories how Swami said she's a brahmachari and there's no end. There are so many such beautiful stories. The reason why Prem and me brought up this is because at the end of all that, Swami on one occasion said that for all the devotion, for all the love that Sai Gita embodied for him, she will be rewarded. Of course, all of us knew too that she is definitely going to be rewarded. In fact, if you remember Prem, the funeral of Sai Gita is the only funeral that Swami has physically attended ever.
Right.
What an honor. I mean, his own bodily parents did not receive that honor which Sai Gita received. So, it has been a very, 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 very special bond. And Swami says that for that devotion and love, she will be rewarded with a human birth. And we have already got that Prem. Oh my God, I mean, this puts into perspective the grandeur of the blessing that all of us have received by receiving this human birth. And that is why, dear listeners, we took this little detour into narrating Sai Gita's stories, because out of the three greatest blessings that any soul can receive in its quest towards moksha, the first blessing all of us have already got, manushyatvam. And therefore, it is a reason for us to celebrate.
You know, even as you are talking about the importance of human birth, I was reminded of what one of our teachers in the university once shared with us. A scientific fact which actually puts into perspective this thing of Swami saying how human birth is so important. Swami says that jantunam narajanma durlabham, which incidentally is also from the Vivek Chudamani, which Swami is very often quoted. You know, there is this process in the human body which Sir was explaining to us called the homeostasis. It is the ability of the brain to control the temperature of the human body. And according to biology, that is supposed to be the most essential activity the brain performs. Because every other chemical process which happens in your body, all your hormone activity, your enzyme activity, everything is based on body temperature. And that is why when you get sick, the body temperature goes up, they somehow want to get it back to normal. Because the body temperature going up or down is a sign of disaster. So this brain activity, which is called homeostasis, is one of the most important thing the brain does. The keeping the body temperature constantly in that conducive, whatever is that temperature for that particular organism. And they found that the chimpanzee, which is supposed to be just one species before the human species. Of course, the missing link is still missing, except for what Swami
had materialized
and shown Professor Kasturi. But this chimpanzee or this monkey, which is supposed to be the nearest ancestor of Homo sapiens, which we know, they found that 94% of the brain is used for this homeostasis process. 94%. So which means 6% of the brain is what is left for all the other activities. For it to reason, for it to think, for it to decide, for it to discriminate. And when they come to the human birth, when they come to Homo sapiens, only 4% of the brain is used for homeostasis.
Wow.
In that, he's saying that, imagine the leap. How much of your mind is given for you for your other thinking? And he says that it's a leap. Even in any other species to species, when you see the evolution, there is no such immense leap which you can see. And that itself shows that why human birth is so precious, even biologically.
Another interesting little fact, actually. It is... As a simile, it is, as a metaphor, it is very, very symbolic and very profound. I heard it during a Dasara talk by Shri S.V. Giri, sir. He was the Vice Chancellor of the university then. He was saying that, you know, when we meditate, we always bring together our index finger and thumb.
Okay.
In that mudra. That mudra is the mudra for meditation. And he said
that... It's supposed to be the Jnana mudra, I think.
Yes. And he said that in the mudra, the index finger symbolizes the jivatma,
right,
that is the individual soul, and the thumb symbolizes the paramatma or the Lord, the Supreme Lord. And so therefore, you want to bring a union of the jivatma and paramatma, and that's why that mudra, the jnana mudra. And then he said, do you know that humans are the only animals that can bring their index finger and thumb together?
Mm-hmm.
They have a grasping thumb like that. So, wow, that was a fact. And I mean, it seems to show that to achieve the ultimate, that is moksha, you definitely need a human birth. In fact, that is what even Yukteswar Giri says to Paramahamsa Yogananda after Yukteswar Giri has given up his body, physical. He comes in a vision and he tells, and there he tells that there are advanced lokas above. I mean, I don't want to go into those details. But even the beings of those advanced lokas, if they want to achieve the ultimate, they have to come down to the human level, because it's only the human who can achieve the divine. So even the devas or whatever advanced beings, they also have to come. All the lower beings also have to come. This is like the perfect middle point for the quantum leap that is necessary to achieve moksha. And therefore, all of us have got it. It's something to congratulate ourselves. Which brings us to the second point, which is mumukshatvam.
Right. Just before we go to mumukshatvam, just one more point which I reminded even as you were talking about the human birth. I think we all know our favorite teacher, one of our favorite teachers in the Vrindavan campus, the Sanskrit teacher.
Oh, yes.
You know, once he shared a very, very beautiful
Dr.
insight.
Dr. Venkateshwar Rao.
Right, Venkateshwar Rao. You know, he shared a very beautiful insight. It's more of a symbolism and a lesson. You know, it is good for us to say that manushyatvam is so important and we've got it. But what is it that characterizes manushyatvam and gives it its importance? He said it is given in this symbolism. You know, if you look at evolution, if you see Darwin's evolution, the entry of the Homo sapien species, is when that standing erect and walking erect came.
Mm.
That is a very, very important point.
Yes, the Homo erectus.
Homo erectus is that species which comes just prior to Homo sapiens.
Mm.
You know, that standing erect is such an important thing. And he said there is a very beautiful symbolism in that.
Mm.
He said those animals which walk on their fours, you know, either crawling or...
even a lion, a tiger,
lion,
everything.
Tiger, all
yes.
of them. And which is most of the species, most of the mammals. He said the head is in line with the heart, the stomach, and the reproductive organs. Okay. And he said, which means that your thinking is only in the level of recreation,
procreation,
your procreation, your food, and your sustenance. He says the heart represents you wishing to be alive. You know, your attachment to the body.
Survival instinct.
Survival.
Hunger.
And
reproduction.
Yes. He says your mind is in the level of these three. It is only man, the only mammal, of course, you can exclude giraffe from it. I think which is the only animal which is in four.
No, I think this is more like a metaphorical.
More like a metaphor, more of a symbolism. He says, man has to have his thinking higher than his need to live, need to eat, and need to reproduce. That is what actually characterizes and makes important the human birth.
And, you know, now we will be able to appreciate... I don't think we should enter mumukshatvam right now because it's almost 1:46 in our studios here. One more point regarding manushyatvam. When we discuss this, we then realize what a great responsibility it is to be a human being. That is why, you know, Swami in his discourse says, I will give you one mantra, the greatest mantra for, achieving whatever that you wish in life. And he says, it's a two-part mantra, the first part of which is, I am not an animal. I am a human being. He says, this mantra, it's not enough that you tell it in exclusion. It's not that you just say, I am not an animal. He says, remind yourselves every day that I am not an animal, I am man. I am not animal, I am man. I am not animal, I am man. Because, Swami says, you have all become akara manavudu, man in form. I want you to be achara manavudu, man in character and conduct. We are having the form of a man, but our behavior is worse than those of animals. And Swami says you can't tell that it's animal behavior because animals do it because it's their instinct, just as we discussed. It is their tuned in behavior, that is the way they are programmed and they do it. You choose consciously to be like that and do those things. You know, we say greedy as a pig, greedy pig. Papam, it's not the fault of a pig. It's meant to eat garbage and it does great service to society. It scavenges, it eats what nobody else will think of eating. And it cleans up nature. But we, when we choose to gorge ourselves, have you seen, Prem, that none of the animals, other than those that have been domesticated, of course, in the wild, they don't suffer obesity. No animal is obese. Only you will see dogs and cats being obese because of that magical touch with the human being.
We share our nature with them. We kind of infuse our nature into them.
Really, you just see that is what happens. Because those things which they do so beautifully and perfectly well in, by instinct, God decided to bless us with a discrimination. Sadly, we don't use it. That is the defining feature of a human being. That discrimination which helps you to choose wisdom and make that quantum leap towards moksha, that is why discrimination has been given. We don't use it and actually misuse it, becoming a devil and suffer from all these. You know, we become like animals. And that is why we can appreciate that statement when Swami says, tell yourself this two-part mantra where first part is, I am not an animal. Second part is, I am a man. I am not an animal, I am a man.
And that inquiring is a very, very important thing which you said, because again, going back to science, you know, what they say is, let us say there is a particular bear living in a forest. Okay, and there is one, let us say one way of hunting which is not working out. They say that the species of that particular bear will give up that style of hunting over few generations. Because that has to get inbuilt in its evolution process. That after so many generations, the bears which come will get that idea inbuilt in their brain that this is not the way to hunt. But it is said that human being is that person has that ability to have a look at it and reason out immediately, this is not working, let's try out something else.
And not
even if for generations if that has been done, to pause and say, no, this does not work out, let's try out something else.
And not only can he realize that, he has also been given the ability to transmit and make everyone else also change.
Right. To share that knowledge.
Sad thing is it's being used for the wrong things. It is being used for the wrong things. That is why Swami says, remember your heritage, remember your man. You have been given discrimination. Your thoughts are supposed to be above your stomach and reproductive organs. Don't stoop to that level alone. You are meant for a much grander purpose. And that is why in the beginning, you know, I said the purpose of Swami's life is to awaken in us the need to inquire into the purpose of our own lives. And that is where actually mumukshatvam comes. Because once we start inquiring into the purpose of our lives, we become really, with each passing moment, we become more and more eager, enthusiastic and keen, curious to know what is it actually, what is my life for? Is it, in Swami's words, is it for khana, peena, sona, marna? That is what, is that your life for? To eat, sleep, drink, sleep and then die finally? So then what is the difference between you and animals? Swami poses the question. He says, animal does all that without any education, without anything. With all your education and everything, finally you're doing all that just to eat, sleep, drink merrily and then die? It is not just for that. So that is where the importance and need of mumukshatvam comes in. But as I said, I think that is a detailed discussion that we should take up possibly in the next satsang. And currently, dear listeners, among the three great blessings, the first is manushyatvam. So when we start out on our journey towards moksha, it is very, very important that we remember we are humans. We are humans and we have human values. And we are not animals. These are the two things that Swami says. I am man, I am not animal. I am man, I am not animal. Let us make this as part of the sadhana. Because that is what will help us take our baby steps on this path towards realizing our ultimate reality.
Right, and it's also very important to see humanness from Swami's point of view. You know, in a discourse, Swami says that people say to err is human. Swami said, who put that wrong idea in your head?
He said, like giving you a license.
Right, Swami said, to err is not human. To be human is to be divine, Swami says. To be human is to reach out to that state of perfection. So don't think it's natural for you to do mistakes. So I think it's very important to see humanness, to view human birth from Swami's point of view also. Because Swami says that this is a launching pad for you to reach that state of ultimate moksha or whatever you wish to call it. So give it that importance.
Exactly. So dear listeners, we have just described the three great boons. We have not gone into details, but the three great blessings that one can receive in one's journey towards the ultimate, that is Manushyatvam, Mumukshatvam and Mahapurusha Samshraya. We have examined to some detail Manushyatvam in our next satsang, next afternoon satsang, which will be next Thursday. We will go into Mumukshatvam and Mahapurusha Samshraya. We hope that you have had a beautiful day so far. We hope that you continue to have a beautiful day. It is such a beautiful day, a day with such great significance, with so much message, and a day filled with so much love. With that prayer and that hope, we offer this segment at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, who is ever present as our Hridaya Nivasi, our Hridaya Stai, our Tai, our Sai. We offer this at his lotus feet, and we shall end with this song, on the other side of which you will have Brother Chandu meeting all of you with his beautiful segment, Love to Love.
Duniya bhar ke log yahan jholi phailaye aate hain. Tere kadmon mein arpan karne hum दिल का नजराना लाए हैं तेरे दरबार में हम आए हैं आज 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 पल पल ये दिल में रहे याद रहे
सुनकर नजर से नजर मिलाकर मैं भूलूं कैसे मैं मैं चाहता हूँ कि परेशान न करे उनका ख्याल, मगर वो जो है कि मेरे ख्वाबों में आए जाते हैं, वो आए या ना आए ये मर्जी उनकी है, हम उनकी राह में नजर बिछाए जाते हैं। या अल्लाह, तेरी हर बात
न खो जाता हूँ मैं,
मौका ऐसा मिले ना मिले।